Whistleblower Report, exposing lies, deceptions, and all that has assaulted our way of life. We must take back our freedom and live as God designed in a free America that honors our Constitution and our Creator. Our experts in medicine, ministry, law, military, environment, and education empower us to grow together as a nation. For such a time as this, the Whistleblower Report offers truth and solutions. Welcome to the Whistleblower Report. This is Dr. Lee for America, and I am here with my guest today, Richard Gage, and I'll tell you more about him in a moment. We're going to be discussing what are some of the links between what happened in 9/11 and how we arrived at where we are today with all that we've experienced with COVID. Because I know some of you may be wondering, why are we discussing on the Whistleblower Report what happened in 9/11? What really did happen? And you heard from Captain Dan Hanley, a experienced military and commercial aviation pilot with an extensive experience over 35 years, describing likelihood that those planes had to be commanded by the uninterruptible autopilot, because none of the pilots that he interviewed could have flown those flight patterns themselves as experienced aviators, much less untrained Muslim hijackers. So I wanted to discuss that with all of you, because I felt like we've been lied to about so many things on so many topics, and our government has a history of doing that in ways that I've come to appreciate more recently have been far more sinister than I ever thought possible. And so I'm continuing our discussion of what happened on 9/11 and the attacks and what happened to the three World Trade Center buildings by bringing on an expert in that field who's been investigating it. Because from 9/11, that led to the Patriot Act, which has resulted in the massive spying on Americans, the loss of many of our freedoms, the loss of many of our constitutional rights. And that also led to the unlawful anthrax vaccine mandates that we have discussed with our military experts in other programs. It led to a lot of things. That it led to more bioweapon development that we didn't know was taking place. And from the attacks on 9/11 and who was behind it and what happened, and all of the legal and public health and unlawful mandates that have occurred, it set us up in many ways for what has transpired in the last 4 years under the COVID attack on humanity, with not only the engineered virus bioweapon, but also the engineered bioweapon COVID injection that is not a medicine, not a vaccine. And it has caused devastating death and destruction worldwide. All of our whistleblower reports have been addressing these issues, but now it's time to start putting the pieces of the puzzle together in a way that helps you understand what has been going on and the very diabolical aspects of that, and what we as citizens need to do to stand up against the assault on all of our freedoms and the assault on our very lives. So with me for this program is Richard Gage. He, AIA, is an the professional designation for architects, for those of you that don't know that abbreviation. He's an architect of 30 years from the San Francisco Bay Area and a member of the American Institute of Architects, AIA, and the founder and former CEO of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, which is now independent. He, along with his courageous wife, Gail, continues to lead the charge towards a real investigation into the destruction of all three World Trade Center skyscrapers on 9/11 at his website, richardgage911.org. Mr. Gage became interested in researching the destruction of the World Trade Center high-rises after hearing the startling conclusions of a reluctant 9/11 researcher, David Ray Griffin, who did a radio program in 2006, which then launched Richard Gage's unyielding quest for truth about 9/11. The organization he founded, AE 9/11 Truth, now numbers more than 3,500 architects and engineers demanding a new investigation into the destruction of all three World Trade Center high-rise buildings on 9/11. As an architect, he has worked on most types of building construction, including numerous fireproofed steel-framed buildings, which you'll understand the reason I mention that when you hear him talk about the 9/11 World Trade Center buildings. Most recently, he has worked on the construction documents for a $400 million mixed-use urban project with 1.2 million square feet of retail, parking structure, and mid-rise office space, altogether about 1,200 tons of steel framing. And why that's important, you will hear as Mr. Gage explains what happened to the three World Trade Center high-rise skyscrapers on 9/11. Thank you so much, Mr. Gage, for joining us today. And I appreciate, as a physician, there's a lot about this that I've had questions about and concerns about, but there was a lot I didn't know. And I certainly am not an architect or an engineer. And some of the physics of all of this is a little beyond my math skills. So I'm eager to have your explanation. Welcome to the Whistleblower Report.
Yes, it's an honor here to be with you, Dr. Lee. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. It's going to be an eye-opener for me, too.
Well, thank you for being here. I looked at all of that. I was so in shock that day. I was working in Dallas and I happened to catch it on the TV screen when I stopped to run an errand before going to the office. And I was literally so shocked that it was difficult. It's like a deer in headlights. And I couldn't make sense of it. And then when I watched the buildings just collapse on themselves, and my scientific mind is saying, how in the world could a plane hit the top of the building and have it just pancake like that into a cloud of dust? But again, I was so in shock. I had no information. And I was getting back to the office, and my first patient was an American Airlines pilot. And the pilot was in shock. We were all in shock. So I have to say, I've had a lot of questions about it, but I couldn't imagine, couldn't wrap my mind around the fact that it could actually have been deliberate. And that's what I'd like for you to address. What happened after all that the research you've done? What have you concluded? And explain it.
Well, I was shocked to learn 18 years ago that there weren't just two towers that came down. There were three. And the third one is a 47-story skyscraper, the tallest building in most of our states, in fact. But I didn't know anything about it. And I asked other architects, oh, I don't know, there's just two towers, right? No, the American Institute of Architects didn't even issue a bulletin, one bulletin, to any of the 90,000 members of that association, of which I'm a member. And they it's like it got swept under the rug. Well, now we know why. Because I go to architecture conferences all around the country. I present on video all three towers, but we start with building 7 because most people don't know anything about it. And we don't have presumptions about how it came down because most of us haven't even heard about it. So the Twin Towers, everybody thinks they know how they came down until we get them in a presentation. And I've done well over 700 of them in 24 countries. And I get these groups of people together and I ask them at the beginning, you know, how many of you pretty much understand how the towers came down? A lot of hands go up. At the end, after showing them the visual information that accompanies this conversation we're having today and which can be seen on our website, I ask them, how many of you think we need a real investigation here? All the hands go up, typically. So that's pretty darn important. Building 7 is it was not hit by a plane, right? So why did it come down, and how did it come down? And you can see it coming down on our website, on the right side at richardgage911.org, and it was 7 hours after the Twin Towers came down, after witnesses hear explosions, and I mean more than a half a dozen witnesses we have on tape, the building drops like a rock straight down uniformly, symmetrically into its own footprint in under 7 seconds. And so if you can visualize that, you'll understand that you've seen this before, like the old hotels in Las Vegas, when they bring them down. It's a classic controlled demolition or implosion. And you'll see Building 7 coming down exactly like those old hotels. It comes down at free fall acceleration. That's as fast as a bowling ball falling out of the sky, which means what, by the way? That not one of the 80 columns in this building gave any resistance at all. So that's pretty darn important. Now, how does that happen? By fire, the official cause of this building's collapse. NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, fumbled this football for 7 years before they produced their report. So anybody who did know about the building, in all likelihood, probably forgot about it and didn't care about it anymore, because all anybody was talking about was the Twin Towers and how do we get ourselves revenge for this act of terror upon the United States, which was, of course, blamed on fanatical Muslims. And you talked last week with Captain Dan Hanley about the planes that hit those two towers. But again, no plane hit this particular tower. And yet it came down exactly like a controlled demolition. So NIST, who was tasked by Congress to explain these collapses to the American people, they developed an elaborate theory of more than a dozen steps, not any of which could have happened. It's completely implausible. But what do they say caused the collapse? Fire, normal office fires. How were there office fires in this building? Well, some of the debris, the huge beams actually, and columns from the World Trade Center North Tower, which was just a football field in length away, hit the building because they were laterally discharged at incredible speeds and distances. We'll get into that. But some of those beams and columns hit this building and started fires. Well, there are a few small scattered fires in the building, and we show those fires in the presentation also on the website, the documentary. And what we see is that they were actually burned out over an hour before this building collapsed at 5:20 in the afternoon. So first of all, the fire theory in and of itself makes no sense whatsoever. But then they go on in this elaborate scheme to suggest through computer modeling, because the steel was carted away on 400 truckloads a day that were lined up ready to take the debris away, starting just 2 weeks after 9/11, to the landfill to be put on barges and sent to China for recycling before investigators could get their hands on it and do a proper forensic investigation. This is the illegal destruction of evidence in a crime scene. But you know what? They didn't have to follow those laws because they declared this an act of war. And in an act of war caused initially by terror, crime scene rules, I guess they can just throw them out the window. The preservation of evidence, there's laws here. So nevertheless, we do have several examples of evidence given to us on a silver platter by numerous agencies, official agencies like FEMA, for instance, who documented in their Appendix C of the Building Performance Assessment Team report in May of 2002. They have a special section called the metallurgical examination of the steel from both World Trade Center 7 and the Twin Towers. What do they find? Molten iron invading the grain boundaries of the steel. Hot sulfur corrosion attack on the steel. How they have the ends of the beams showing them partly evaporated. We got to unpack this, Dr. Lee, because there's a lot of evidence here right up front in 2002 that NIST, when they took over the investigation, threw out the window. What do we find? Let's talk about the liquid molten iron first, which the first responders saw pools of. They were freaked out by it. You don't see pools of molten iron in a normal office fire. Office fires only get to be about 500-600 degrees typically, especially these fires, which were not super hot. Super hot fires can get to be about 1,000 degrees. But either way, were 3 to 4 times less temperature than it requires to melt steel. And so how did these silver dollar size holes get in the steel? How was the steel eroded in what they called extreme temperatures? They don't know where they came from. They don't even speculate. This is an incredible mystery to them. And so they just leave it for NIST. And again, NIST throws out the metallurgical examination and it's not included in the final report. Then you have the U.S. Geological Survey doing their studies in their Particle Atlas of 2005 of all the dust samples, hundreds of them from all around the World Trade Center. What do they find in every one of them? Billions of previously molten iron. This is actual elemental iron. We haven't used iron in our skyscrapers for 100 years. pure iron. We do use steel, which has iron in it, but that has all kinds of other alloys to make it more ductile and stronger. So here's molten iron microspheres. How do they get spherical? How do they get molten? How do they get iron? None of this can be explained in the official narrative provided by NIST to the American people and to the Congress.
Where could it have come from? The molten iron.
It's a classic byproduct of thermite. A thermite is an incendiary used by the military to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter. It works by means of extreme heat, producing temperatures over 4,000 degrees. So we have a plausible theory, some plausible evidence that could support, that does support the theory, and it happens to be the only evidence that makes any sense to support the theory, because this building, again, wasn't hit by a plane, and fires can't melt steel. They can soften it. At 1,200 degrees, fire can even cause steel to bend and warp. We have hundreds of tests that show just that, but not when they're fireproofed, like these buildings were, and certainly not a collapse or a single point of failure, as NIST focuses on building column 79, which was holding up a large girder, which held several long span beams, which NIST claims heated up these girders and pushed the heated up the beams and pushed the girder off of its seat on this particular column 79, none of which could have happened for a variety of reasons. But they also completely ignore the existing structural elements in the beam to column connection that would have absolutely prevented that. So this is all documented very carefully in our online documentary called 9/11 Explosive Evidence, Experts Speak Out. So where could the molten iron microspheres have come from that the USGS documented so well in their particle atlas of the World Trade Center dust? Again, molten iron is the byproduct of thermite. So we have ample evidence here, both from FEMA with the molten iron attacking the steel, and from the first responder eyewitnesses of pools of molten iron, and the USGS study that shows these billions of previously molten iron microspheres. They can't have come from the welders. They're ubiquitous. They're everywhere. There's up to 4 tons of this material, which is evidence of thermite incendiaries and evidence of ignited thermite in this case. So none of this evidence either can be accounted for in the official narrative whatsoever. And so then we have additional eyewitness testimony of first responders that heard explosions. We have a variety of first responders and others who actually hear the explosion and then see the building coming down. I mean, that's a pretty specific order of events, which describes not the building coming down, making these explosions, these sounds of explosion, but completely isolated from each other. And then we have the seismic evidence, which shows a seismic event happening not as the building's coming down, but 10 seconds before the building comes down. And that can't be explained in the official narrative either, but is explained again by the first responder eyewitnesses. So building 7 has a whole package of irrefutable forensic evidence and eyewitness testimony that can leave us with only support for one theory, and that is the destruction by incendiaries, which is incendiaries are specifically thermite, are used by the military like to destroy tanks, and they destroy by means of heat. So this technology has been used to bring structures down in history, but it's very expensive and hard to control. So they use high energy explosives like C4 and RDX, typically in controlled demolitions, but they provide very loud bangs and very bright flashes that we've all seen when we watch a controlled demolition on TV or the old hotels in Las Vegas. So they wouldn't have wanted to use that technology in a deceptive controlled demolition like we have at the World Trade Center. So this is this evidence has been seen by the University of Alaska, for instance, who conducted a 4-year, $300,000 study of the destruction of this building. Because let's face it, if this building really did come down by fire, the official narrative, then that means other similarly designed buildings, fireproof steel frame structures in particular, could be vulnerable to such a catastrophic collapse in seconds at free fall acceleration due to a few small scattered fires also. We don't want that to happen. But none of the structural engineering codes have changed. And none of you would think it'd be it'd be the most studied building failure ever, because it's completely unprecedented. We've not lost one steel frame fire protected structure to fires in history around the world. It has not happened. So this is a completely unprecedented, and yet that's the hypothesis NIST struck out for when they started their investigation in 2002, and FEMA before them. And
well, one thing just to add to what you've said, and then we'll take a break. I was glued to the television when I finished work that day. And that day there was a report, and I remember it. There was a report about the third World Trade Center tower coming down and about fire and exactly what you said. I remember hearing that, and I remember hearing there were briefly some interviews of eyewitnesses, and then what I noticed, and I didn't have any explanation for it at the time, what I noticed was that disappeared from any further discussion of the 9/11 attacks. And as you said, they only referred to the Twin Towers, that third building, which I don't remember whether I learned at that time that it was called World Trade Center 7, but I remember people being interviewed about what could have happened because it wasn't hit by a plane. But then it just disappeared from the media.
It sure did. And it never appeared in structural engineering circles or architecture circles. It's like the thing that never happened. And the American Institute of Architects board lied on the stage at their meeting where 300 of their top people were, in which I was presenting. I only had 5 minutes to present this evidence without slides, so it was very difficult to do. But they said, oh, we've gone over this. We know how this building came down. It came down by diesel fires. Well, that was a theory that was completely abandoned by NIST very early on. So they have no idea what they're talking about. And they nor do they even think about it being an unprecedented event, that we've never lost such a building by fire ever. So we also have foreknowledge of this building's collapse. And by mysterious construction workers, for instance, who are walking away from Building 7, hearing an explosion over their shoulder, looking back at the building, and then looking straight into the CNN camera in the early afternoon of 9/11, saying, "You hear that? That building's coming down. Flame and debris coming down. The building's going to blow up."
You know, I remember that happening. I was so focused on what was going on that day. But then again, as I said, it disappeared. Life was kind of turned upside down, and I didn't go back to it, and I wasn't looking into the whys and wherefores of how they came down. We were just all trying, so much shock, we were just trying to deal with the consequences and dealing with the change in our lives. And for me personally, it was a week before I could get a flight back to Arizona, where I lived. I mean, skies over Dallas were silent. Never that happened. And it was quite a while before I could leave to come home from working there that week. So there was so much in upheaval. I guess I'm not surprised I didn't go back to look at it, but I remember that just the sense of something isn't right, but I didn't know what it was. So thank you for being with us today to tell us that. We'll continue more after the break, because there's a lot more to talk about on all of this. This is Dr. Lee for America with a whistleblower report from Truth for Health Foundation. Check out our website at www.truthforhealth.org. And don't forget to sign up for our email alerts, be part of our crusade, and join our Faith Over Fear seminars, and listen to our whistleblower reports and share them with your friends. We'll be right back after the break.
We live in a world full of disinformation, lies, and deceit, often from those institutions and individuals that we used to rely on and trust. In the chaos that surrounds us on a daily basis, it's difficult to find a place for truthful information and helpful guidance. Where can we turn for honest answers, critical solutions, and information that empowers us to be the person that God intended? The Truth for Health Foundation. The Truth for Health Foundation works every day to fight for your basic human rights. We have a track record of providing life-saving emergency actions that can improve your health and empower you with the tools to be safe, happy, and free to live your life. With over 100,000 supporters around the world, we are a critical voice of truth in today's world. We invite you to join our community of financial supporters so that we can continue to be your trusted partner for health, for life, for resilience. Join us today by giving now.
Check out the new Truth for Health store at truthforhealthstore.com. We have exclusive professional formulas with exciting new products, including True Mitochondrial Boost that can help improve your energy, memory, focus, and concentration. All of our products are manufactured in certified compliant facility using good manufacturing practices approved and inspected by the FDA. Check us out, www.truthforhealthstore.com.
Welcome back to the second half of the Whistleblower Report. This is Dr. Lee for America, and I'm here with Richard Gage, architect and original founder of the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth that is now independent, and he continues his work on the exposing the truth of what happened on 9/11 with his own investigative work and research at richardgage911.org. And he is an active architect in practice in the San Francisco Bay Area with extensive experience. So we really do have, as you say, a lot of firsthand evidence and federal with the eyewitnesses, as well as the federal agency evidence that certainly World Trade Center 7 was a controlled demolition. And, you know, your point about picking a strategy that would be better for a deceptive controlled demolition, I want to emphasize that point for our listeners, because that's very similar to what we saw during the COVID years, that the strategies they picked to use in all of our work with the COVID death protocols in hospitals and the COVID shots and even the COVID illness itself were replete with massive deceptions and lies. And the strategies they used to roll out the COVID shot were extraordinarily deceptive, and we can unpack that in another show. But there are a lot of parallels here. So as you talk about it, I wanted to emphasize that point. Is there more that you wanted to say about World Trade Center 7, Building 7, or would you like to move on to the Twin Towers?
Let's jump into the Twin Towers, because now we have a set of irrefutable, overwhelmingly convincing evidence that showed us, even without the graphics, but I highly recommend that we look at them, that was a controlled demolition, which required planning in advance. You don't bring a building down in a day, especially while it's burning. So this was a conspiracy by any measure. And so we have to ask ourselves, okay, you got me on that one, a WTC-7. But not the Twin Towers. Everybody knows how they came down. The official narrative tells us that as a result of the plane impacts, we have fires. Well, those fires, NIST acknowledges, burned out within 10 minutes. Most of it, 90% of it, outside the building. The rest of it was gone in just 10 minutes. And then those fires developed through the building and without sprinklers affected the steel. Especially since the airplanes had, they claim, knocked the fireproofing off of the steel, which must have happened.
How is that even possible?
Well, an airplane is not going to knock all the fireproofing all the way around the building off of the steel. It certainly knocked some of it off. But the main point is that these fires could not have brought. Well, the official narrative tells us that the upper story above the point of jet plane impacts drives the rest of the building down to the ground and then destroys itself. Well, just the physics of that is clear to most everybody. There's an equal and opposite destructive force when two bodies collide. And so you can't have the cold, hard, intact steel providing no resistance. And yet these buildings fell at nearly free fall acceleration. Once again, the building is accelerating down faster and faster each second, the definition of acceleration, to the ground in just over a dozen seconds. When it meets the cold, hard steel below, it would slow down, right? There's 80,000 tons of structural steel. That's actually 20 times the strength that needed to be to support that structure to some extent. But literally 90% of that structure has been removed so that the upper part doesn't hesitate, jolt, or when it's impacting the lower part at all. It is a smooth, sudden descent at 2/3 of free fall acceleration in both the North Tower and the South Tower, which had very different damage patterns from the planes and the fires. And yet, in each case, the upper part is actually destroyed in itself the first few seconds. We don't see the upper part driving the rest of the building down to ground in any of the photographs or videos. It is destroying itself. We can see it telescoping in on itself in the first 3 seconds. And it looks exactly like Building 7, as a matter of fact. It drops smoothly, nearly symmetrically into its own, not into its own footprint in this case. Because after that, what we have is laterally expelled, freely flying, structural steel sections weighing 4 and 8 tons, ejected out, not down. This is not a gravitational collapse. It's a laterally driven collapse. And these pieces are sent 600 feet in all directions, impaling themselves in skyscrapers all around the building, destroying the Winter Gardens 600 feet away. So this looks nothing like a collapse after the first 3 seconds. And it looks like a controlled demolition in the first 3 seconds. And before that, we have 180 first responders hearing sounds of explosions, seeing flashes of light, feeling explosions under their feet before, many of them, before the towers ever came down. Once again, a very specific order of events. I would relish the opportunity to read a couple of these quotes. Shortly before the first tower came down, says Bradley Mann, "I remember feeling the ground shaking. I heard a terrible noise. And then debris just started flying everywhere. I saw flash, flash, flash at the lower level of the building," says Assistant Fire Commissioner Stephen Gregory. "You know, like when they demolish a building?" Karen DeShore.
I heard that video clip. I remember that.
Well, she says, "With each popping sound, it was initially an orange and then a red flash came out of the building. And then it would just go all around the building on both sides. Saw a number of brief light sources being emitted from inside the building between floors 10 and 15. Now, this is down low in the building. He saw about 6 of these brief flashes accompanied by a crackling sound before the tower collapsed." This is Stephen Gregory, Assistant Fire Commissioner. "I saw low-level flashes. I saw flash, flash, flash. And then it looked like the building came down. An explosion appeared at the very top, simultaneously from all 4 sides. Material shot out horizontally. And then there seemed to be a momentary delay before you could see the beginning of the collapse." You see how specific these are? I've got 2 dozen of these quotes that I don't have time to share with you, but there's 180 altogether. It's an extraordinary set of eyewitness testimony from these professional expert witnesses. We also have video of the building. We have asymmetrical damage from the fires and the planes, but we have complete symmetrical damage all the way down each face of the building. And these videos show it from below, just like the firefighters were describing. Pop, pop, pop. One of these videos shows the leading corner of the North Tower, and there are individual explosions, about a dozen of them, in this looped sequence video that we show in the documentary, 9/11 Explosive Evidence, Experts Speak Out. This is like floor by floor blowing out on all 4 sides. And then we have these isolated explosive ejections that are blowing out of the building 20 stories down below what we're told is a gravitational collapse up at the zone of destruction. Even 40 stories down and 60 stories down, these ejected solid objects probably from mistimed explosions. These are seen ejected out of the South Tower as it's coming down also, dozens of them. Isolated explosive ejections called squibs in the controlled demolition area. So physics teacher David Chandler analyzes the building, just like he did with Building 7, proving that it came down at free fall acceleration. He models the top of the North Tower and finds that it comes down at two-thirds of free fall. It's accelerating. It's not decelerating when it meets the incredible quantity of steel, 80,000 tons, in these 14-inch by 14-inch square steel tube columns marching all the way around the perimeter of the building at about 3 feet, leaving only, by the way, narrow slits for glass that are 2 feet wide. There's more steel, in other words, on the facade of this building than glass. And that's why it can handle 20 times the live load of the building, meaning the things that people put in the building and the people themselves. It's a massive structure with 47 steel core columns grouped around the elevator shafts and 240 perimeter columns. So we've really got to get a handle on this evidence, and it has to be explained, because it's clear that many of these freely flying structural steel sections are in fact ejected outward and again up to 600 feet. And it's enough energy to hurl a 200-pound cannonball 3 miles. And there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these steel sections. So if they're all ejected out of the building, we have to ask ourselves, what do we see at the bottom? Only a 3, 4, or 5-story pile of miscellaneous metal, some of the columns, but we don't see a 20 stories of 80,000 tons of steel down there. It's been ejected outside the perimeter of the building, which means what? That weight, 80,000 tons, at least, is not available to crush the building. And yet, Zdenek Bazant from Chicago Northwestern University used the weight of all of that steel and all the concrete to develop his mathematical calculation just 2 days after 9/11. He submits this very intense peer-reviewed paper to the Journal of Engineering Mechanics, the American Society of Civil Engineers, and that has remained their only key theoretical basis for the collapse of this building. But it's complete fraud, because there wasn't 100,000 tons of steel that could have crushed the rest of the building. It's been destroyed with these outward ejections and laterally ejected. So we have the concrete. There was 4 and 8-inch thick concrete slabs, each an acre in size, 110 of them. Well, guess what? That's 90,000 tons of weight also. And we'd expect to see pancakes at the bottom of a progressive collapse, or a pancaking collapse, or a pile driving collapse. It's got many names, but we don't see 50 of them. We don't see 20 of them. We don't see one of these acre-sized floors. So where did all the concrete go? Well, we show the videos and the photos. They all show 90,000 tons of concrete pulverized in midair with the explosions that the first responders heard. So that's where the concrete is, and it lands where? Not at the bottom of the pile, but it's spread in these, carried by hot gases of the thermite evidence that we talked about, and distributed laterally across all of Lower Manhattan, a 3-square-mile area, in a blanket 3 inches thick. What do they find in the contents of that? 30% of it is concrete. So that's where the 90,000 tons of concrete is, which means what? It isn't available either to crush the building. So this is not a gravity-driven collapse whatsoever. The concrete has been pulverized up in the air in these explosions. So we have complete fraud on the part of Zdeněk Bezant, this mathematical genius, who wrote this paper just 2 days after 9/11. We were, all the rest of us were in shock, right? We're trying to figure out, well, what happened to us? Who did this to us? When's the next attack coming? But this guy is busy in his den calculating. No, he must have had this paper done well before 9/11, which indicates also foreknowledge. One of the 13 parallels, by the way, between the false flag operation of 9/11 and the false flag operation of COVID. We'll get to those in a minute. But again, we have the destruction of evidence in easily the largest and most perplexing structural failures in history. 400 truckloads a day carted away, prompting Bill Manning, editor-in-chief of Fire Engineering Magazine, to cry out, "Crucial evidence that could answer many questions is on the slow boat to China, showing an astounding ignorance of government officials to the value of a thorough scientific investigation. The destruction and removal of evidence must stop immediately." But it didn't.
No, I heard that. I remember that on the news, or I remember reading about it, and I thought, what? This is preposterous. How could they do that? But, you know, you made the point that by describing it as an act of war, they excused the destruction of evidence. And, of course, that's what they did in COVID.
A lot of evidence there. You've gone into that in your presentations. Well, this is what has convinced now 3,600 architects and engineers to demand a new investigation. Every one of their signatures they're verified, and they're staking their reputation online publicly. NIST only has a couple of dozen engineers who have staked their reputation. So that's the weight of evidence. But of course, we don't have the megaphone of the mainstream media to get the truth out there, because this has been seriously censored. Censorship, yet another parallel between 9/11 and COVID. So we have all the features of a controlled demolition, and some very uncharacteristic features as well, with this lateral ejection, particularly in the extreme hot temperatures and molten iron, which is seen, by the way, pouring out of the South Tower minutes prior to its collapse. Again, the evidence of thermite incendiaries, molten iron, and aluminum oxide ash, the other byproduct of thermite incendiaries, which is seen trailing these thick white, with these thick white smoke clouds trailing the 4 and 8 ton structural steel sections laterally ejected. It looks more like the volcanic eruption in the Tongan Sea than any kind of a collapse. We've been bamboozled completely. And that's why we put this evidence in our documentary, 9/11 Explosive Evidence, Experts Speak Out, which can be seen freely on our website, richardgage911.org. We've also documented the work of Professor Leroy Halsey, one of the top forensic structural engineers in the country, who took on the NIST report of Building 7 and proved it completely wrong, that the building could not have come down by fire. It could only have come down by the elimination of all the columns in the building. Well, how do you do that? They don't speculate, right? They're structural engineers. But we've shown the evidence at what could and what has done exactly that. So that's in the documentary by Dylan Avery called 7. And we've also submitted this evidence in which the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry sponsored and submitted 60 exhibits to the U.S. Attorney in Lower Manhattan for a special grand jury investigation, and we've sued the U.S. attorney there to make sure that there is a grand jury investigation. And the courts that we appealed to were not on our side, apparently, and they said we didn't have standing. Well, we had family members, we had architects, we had engineers, and there's plenty of standing, but they can get by these corrupt judges, and it's really quite a crime. So we have to ask ourselves, realizing that, yeah, the Twin Towers were also controlled demolitions, and so this is obviously a conspiracy, and it's backed up by lots and lots of facts, which you also need to see on the website. But the truth about 9/11 is a very dark one, and we have to ask ourselves, where do we draw our line in the sand? Do we wait for the next 9/11 and just hope it doesn't get worse? Well, it did get worse, didn't it, Dr. Lee? It got a lot
absolutely
worse.
Did absolutely did, Richard. These are all crimes against humanity, and literally a number of us early in 2020 were calling it that. And do you realize now, you may not know the medical data from around the world, but we're now approaching 20 million people globally have died of complications of the COVID shots.
Mm.
And that, of course, is orders of magnitude more deaths and more destruction than what we saw on 9/11. And we still don't have an investigation of that. We have had court cases, dozens of court cases dismissed by the corrupt judges. We're seeing the subversion of our legal system playing out every day with the double standard, with who's in the White House now versus who was in the White House and being persecuted and sanctioned. Just hit with $354 million fine with no fraud and no one injured. I mean, what is happening to this country? And that's why I said it's so important that we at Truth for Health Foundation, as a public charity, and the whistleblower report go back to look more closely at what happened in the attacks of 9/11. Now, we've been examining other things that have taken place before that, with the vaccine escalation in the 80s and the changes in the adulterants in food in the 1970s and 80s. So there's a lot we are looking at, but we needed to go back to 9/11. We needed to start analyzing the parallels between the cover-up, the crime, the foreknowledge, the planning, all of that, then, and how that plays in. And I'd like to invite you back to do a whole show on the parallels with COVID, because there are so many that it would be really good to go into more detail if we combine your knowledge on 9/11 and all the work that I've done on COVID since February 2020, and some of the backstory even before that, with what was leading up to it in all the provisions in Obamacare that we saw played out in the COVID bounties that hospitals were paid to kill people with remdesivir. So there's a lot for us to talk about, and I'm very grateful for all of your work, for your focus on the truth, and the courage it takes to do that, because everywhere we turn, people's lives, careers, livelihood are being attacked and destroyed in order to perpetuate the lie. Scott Peck wrote a book in the 1980s called The People of the Lie, and this is being played out globally today in ways that Scott Peck, who is no longer with us, could never have imagined. But I read that book at the time and used it therapeutically to help patients understand some of what they might experience with the malignant narcissist. And people need to go back and find that book and read about it, because that is who is controlling all of us now and controlling the narrative. So there's a lot of unpacking of the lies and deception. Any concluding remarks, Mr. Gage, today, and we'll have you back.
You bet. I encourage people to look at the evidence on the website. There's documentaries that are 15 minutes long, an hour long, the hour and a half long, 9/11 explosive evidence, experts speak out, is exceptional. And we're making another documentary called 9/11 Crime Scene to Courtroom, in which each of these pieces of evidence is laid out, supported by forensic evidence and eyewitness testimony. And we have two dozen expert witnesses also. And this film is being, so evident piece of evidence by piece of evidence, in episode by episode, in this film series, the most comprehensive body of 9/11 evidence ever assembled. We filmed it already. We're in post edit now, and people can co-produce the film with us, which would be a huge help, at richardgage911.org.
Thank you so much for that. All of you, help share this program and encourage your friends and community around you to look at the truth being exposed at richardgage911.org, and share our resources at truthforhealth.org, because our survival is at stake. And if you sit back and remain on the couch and remain silent, evil prevails, and we can be silent no longer. This is Dr. Lean for America. Go to truthforhealth.org, join our crusade, sign up for our email, and join us in our Faith Over Fear community program every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, virtual community of people who want truth, hope, and solutions to combat the lies and deception. We'll be back again with another whistleblower report. Thanks for joining us.